Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and if an Italian guy joined the Yakuza, would his code name be Tony Geary? Oh, this is going to be such a hit over on Blue Sky. Send Skeet. And with me, I have...
Boo, I'm a pumpkin now because it's October, though it doesn't feel like it for several reasons.
And...
Ow!
Yeah, I can tell you were napping, because it's another one of those times where we took some days off.
To be fair, we needed it after last time.
That and my weekend got particularly packed, but that's something we can touch on in a bit.
Yeah, we took the week off.
In fact, go ahead.
The week we did last week is like, yeah, I took a week off, but then realized the week off the week when, well, a bunch of shit happened, which we'll discuss later, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll touch on that later, and the timing was not on our side for that.
Yeah, in fact, I feel like we should probably open on the formalities instead of delaying them out. First of all, we should ask, Alex, you're alive, right? I'm not hallucinating your voice in this call.
Well, some would argue that I was never alive to begin with, but that's a story for another day. Yes, I am fine. For most of you out there who do know, hurricanes are a bitch. Even when they weaken, when they make landfall, they still make a lot of damage. Like, this hurricane that happened last week, it made its way up the Florida panhandle through the Appalachian Mountains, Georgia, Tennessee, the Carolinas. I am fine. We got about 6 inches of rain over a span of 24 hours, which was not fun. But overall, I am fine. The western half of my state is not fine. It is really bad. I can't... Just saying that would be understating it.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Like I got... Now, keep in mind, I'm a Floridian. I know we make a lot of jokes about, like, hurricane safety and how lax we are, but I'm gonna be real with you. The second that I saw photos of Waffle Houses getting boarded up, I... low-key shit my pants. And I'm not saying that to be funny, because for those of you who don't know, remember, there's a thing called the Waffle House Index, which is a legit metric for gauging how serious a storm is. If the Waffle House is closed, you are fucked. You better start praying to whatever god you believe in, because holy shit.
Because with a lot of rain comes... flooding, especially with lakes and rivers and dams. It's going to take a while to get everything, you know, recovered to a somewhat hospitable state. That's all I'm going to say. Just, if you can help out in any way, please do. We need it, like, really badly right now. It is bad.
Very.
God damn, yeah.
Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Let's see, aside from the weather being, well, like this because, well, if you know what, just, yeah. Work has been pretty, kind of hectic. Or at least, kind of like, it's a thing I gotta do, gotta make sure we gotta keep everything clean or you know, present it, well presented, and get an ownership, make sure you don't fuck up with shit. And we pass, barely. It's like, you get a D plus.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is this, at least when it comes to my part, I'm like, well, you didn't fuck up on your part, so you're good. But it's like, I was kind of shook about shit like that, because let's be honest, sometimes the white people be kind of lazy and shit.
Oh, the stories I could tell.
Yeah.
Come to think of it, oh yeah, that's right. Isn't this Wednesday or Thursday, whatever? As you may know, by that time I'll be 34 because my birthday's this week.
Woo! You're still alive. Woo! I'm sorry, that sounded insincere. I'm happy that you're still alive, but like, 34 is a very weird age.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a thing. Oh yeah, that's right. I'm still the oldest of this on this podcast. Again, I don't like it.
Also, I'm just thinking about that one Patton Oswalt bit where he said you're only allowed to celebrate your birthday as an adult like every 10 years. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. If I make it to 31, I'm going to celebrate because I feel like it. So celebrate that you're 34. Anyway. Anyway, as for me... Well, I've also had my own frustrations at work, and if you're wondering how I'm dealing with that, you can probably tell by the tone of my voice that I'm a bit drunk right now.
Yeah, four shots of something.
It's called Sazerac. It's a rye whiskey brand that's 45% alcohol by volume.
It's America's pastime. Alcohol.
Drunk podcasting, man. Just like our forefathers would say. But anyway, aside from that, part of the reason why we delayed this episode out is because I in particular had a very busy weekend. So I'm going to start off with the two more frivolous things. So just I thought I'd mention this as a fun aside. I finally decided to bite the bullet on watching the musical Hamilton. And musicals aren't my forte, and I'm not sure it's something that I'd ever willingly rewatch of my own volition. I mean, if someone asked me to watch it, I'd be like, eh, I'm not put off by it. But I will say, there were a few things I liked about it. Unsurprisingly, every single moment that David Diggs is on stage absolutely fucking rules. Because keep in mind, he plays two roles in the musical. In the first act, he plays a French guy, Marquis de Lafayette, who's bros with Hamilton. And then the second act, he plays Thomas Jefferson, who's just like, hey, yo, fuck you, Hamilton, and your stupid fucking rat tail. Seriously, like, just look up clips of Jefferson in that musical. The way he antagonizes the shit out of Hamilton is just chef's kiss. Also... sorry, go ahead.
I was like, Russell Town to be Diggs.
Yeah, on a side note, in my side hobby of cosplay, I finally put a new one together for Adam from Hasbin Hotel. Mark, I know you saw. I'm not surprised you shared that video on your Instagram.
Yes, I did. I had to share it.
It was just too fitting, because like... To put this in a Phineas and Ferb quote, if I had a nickel for every time Adam the First Man got cucked by the devil, I'd have two nickels. Lucifer fucked both of his ex-wives in that show, and it's fucking hilarious. Because fuck Adam, he fucking sucks.
Yeah, and also you wonder why she was thinking, the song he posted was No Worries song, It was the one with Dundercan on it. When he said, "Why are you mad?"
I'm good in that Honda, bitch.
Bitch.
One too.
You should be here with me.
Wait, Cass, are you out there? I swear to God, I hear my roommate making fun of me. I think coming here and saying to my face. Oh, fuck!
Fuck you!
Oh my god! 10 minutes in, we're already off the rails.
Thanks
to the magic of alcohol.
For context, my roommate cosplays Lucifer in that show. It's very funny. Anyway. On relatively more serious business, so part of the reason that this podcast was delayed was because of me, because I had a very busy last weekend. So my band, we had to, you know, we were working on a new song, and we decided, you know what, let's go in and record it. So it was last Saturday was when we were setting up the drum stuff, so that way we could do the actual recording stuff on Sunday night. Now, keep in mind, we got there at like 6:30, 7 o'clock, and drums take a bit of time to set up if you've ever been in a recording situation. But overall, it took like about 2-3 hours. But that was pretty much straightforward. The last thing we needed to do was set up the wiring situation for the headphone mix. You know, so we could all hear each other while we were playing. Keep in mind, the one thing that we needed in order to actually complete the circuitry, as it were, was a splitter cable that my guitarist had, but he was unfortunately busy playing a show that night. For context, it was me and my bass player who was there. And we spent until 1:30 in the morning trying to MacGyver an alternative solution to this whole endeavor.
Oh, God.
And nothing really worked. We needed that splitter cable.
Damn.
So I didn't get home until like... I didn't get home until like 3 o'clock. Because this was quite a bit of a drive out from where I live, so...
Fuck you, Adam.
Fuck you, Lucifer!
Okay, you said MacGyver... This was MacGruber.
I never...
No, that would have been an explosion.
I never watched MacGruber. Part of me kind of wants to, though.
Good. Yeah, it's a good first movie.
I mean, I watched the movie. And SNL skits, that's it.
So, anyway, then finally comes Sunday night, when we're finally free. My guitarist is free, and he's able to bring... the splitter cable and all that business. We get that wiring situation complete, and we play through quite a bit of takes. Because we need to get a clean take, and there's small things I'm messing up on, I'll admit, from, like, tempo, to the fact that every time we heard the playback, you could hear me click accidentally hitting the sticks together. That really frustrated me. But eventually we got a pretty decent take that was recorded. I say it like that specifically because there was a point about halfway through where we got a take that we were pretty proud of. But then when we go out to the room where our engineer is like has his monitors and is looking at the audio mix and everything, he's like, "Oh, I forgot to record that one."
Yeah.
And in that moment, I hear the Seinfeld baseline. Why the fuck is my life turning into a goddamn sitcom? laugh track.
Oh god.
See, I know Alex is laughing because he is college certified in this shit, so like he has room to laugh at my misfortune.
Oh god. Attention all audio engineers. When the waveform is red, you're recording. If it's not red, you're not getting shit.
Oh, God. But
good to know.
But, yeah. I mean, we did eventually get a good take. All is good. So, keep in mind, I had to make, like, hour-long drives back and forth between my house and this recording place. At hour minimum, because I also had to pick up my bass player. Then comes the Monday, because then I had to drive back out to my old stomping grounds in Miami. Why, you may ask? Because I got myself tickets to catch Sum 41's farewell tour. Because I am still 12 years old at heart, and I still think Sum 41 unironically slaps. And to be fair, that was a pretty fun night. Granted, because of my usual ritual, like, my usual procedure of just getting the t-shirt first and then going to inside to the venue. You might be wondering what t-shirt I got. The shirt I got was a tour shirt that on the front said, "Fuck Sum 41. Because I think I'm funny.
Is that like their version of Primus Sucks or something?
You know, I'm not sure. Maybe this is just a design they came up with for this last tour. I would have to check. But anyway, because of that, I only caught the last two or three songs by the opening band, which, interestingly, was Many Eyes, the Keith Buckley-fronted Every Time I Die spinoff project. And they sounded pretty alright live, although, I'm gonna have words about that album on the roundup, cause... yeah. Anyway, after them was a band that I had never listened to, this ska band called The Interrupters. And they were honestly a lot of fun, I'll admit. You know, good ska jams, some playful banter about everyone going to the pools at their hotel without the guitarist. Fun times. And then, of course, seeing Sum 41, you know, just really a whole lot of fun. You know, they played all kinds of stuff, past, present, future, etc. You know, some stuff from the new album, some of the old, old classics. They played the song from the Godzilla movie, We're All to Blame, which, chef's kiss. It made me really happy that they played some stuff from Underclass Hero, given that that's the first album that I ever bought with my own money, as opposed to, you know, having someone in my family download it for me off one of those websites. And in case you're wondering, yes, their encore did close on In Too Deep. Very obvious, but sometimes you gotta go with the obvious choice, because that's an indisputable pop-punk classic. I don't care who you are, or how old you are, that song is a fucking banger. Yeah, that was my last weekend. By the way, Raising Cane's hits really different at 11:30 at night. Just saying.
So it tastes like chicken?
No, I'm just saying, when you're getting out of the concert, and it's like dead at night, that shit just hits different.
Okay, because everything we have about Raising Cane, all about is chicken don't taste that good, or at least they you know, the sauce.
Which people, yeah. Dunk that shit into. So, wait, have you never had Raising Cane's?
We don't have it here.
Fair enough. So I will say this. The quality of the chicken is pretty solid for a chain. The breading seasoning situation could use some work. It really is a case of, like, the sauce doing a lot of the heavy lifting. But you know what? That is a damn good sauce. So, yeah, that was my busy-ass weekend, making hour-plus drives 3 days in a row. I did not have time to prepare the document, so that's why we're doing this now. And we're almost 20 minutes in. Holy shit.
Okay, damn.
Okay, the moral of the story here, kids, get your splitter cables in order, make sure your engineer presses the record button, and if necessary, just do comps and punch-ins.
That, all that stuff. But now that all of that formality business is out of the way, we can move on to the usual fun we have on the show, starting, of course, with the new song discussion for the past week. As always, there will be a playlist down in the description so you can follow along with us, pick up some new tunes, mark your calendars for new interesting albums, all that jazz. So, speaking of funny stuff, we're going to start off here with the newest single from the band Chatpile. Their much-anticipated second album, Cool World, is dropping October 11th, just in time for spooky season. And we have the newest single here called Funny Man, which... musically, we have this steady kind of grooving tempo. The verses, compared to the more melancholic tone of the single Mask, have this very atonal kind of, like, hammer-on pull-off thing that kind of sounds like Crazy Bus in a way. It's very, like, intentionally anxiety-inducing and discordant, especially with the staccato tone of it all, before things switch into kind of this more godflesh-sounding chorus. The vocals are, of course, delivered in this very, like, kind of panicked, rambling, stream-of-conscious tone of voice that, contrary to the title, sounds very serious and is not all that funny. But if this kind of anxiety-inducing heavy music is your thing, it's certainly my thing, then this is some this is absolutely understanding the assignment. Now, whether you like the assignment is a completely different thing entirely.
Yeah, this track is very Dillinger-esque in a lot of ways, only minus the frantic screaming everywhere, so more just in tone and riff. It's pretty all right.
Now, if you thought we were only going to open on one uncomfortable, abrasive, extreme music jam, then I just have to ask a question about this next track. You like jazz? Well, more like extreme metal that's fused with jazz elements, but you know what I mean. So, the ever-so-eccentric masked weirdos in Imperial Triumphant have dropped a new one-off single here. Whether it's part of a new album remains to be seen, but for now we have the song called Eye of Mars. And things start off appropriately discordant and menacing, with those cutting tremolos and blast beats delivering plenty of that aggressive energy, punctuated by plenty of groovier sections that feature these absolutely blaring, you know, brass horn sections, adding to just kind of the manic energy of it all. The song's momentum generally swapping back and forth between that rapid-fire intensity and these more steady chugging chords, and we even get this particularly nasty, menacing set of passages in the last minute and a half where the guitar chords are more sparse, but the drums still push through with tons of rapid fills. The mix just kind of altogether swelling with this kind of eerie, menacing, chaotic energy that, as a fan of Imperial Triumphant, I am feeling very serviced by all of this.
Yeah, so this band is kind of weird, and their music is just as weird. It's got a lot of wild, noodly bits to it that fit right in with being crazy avant-garde metal, so if that's your thing, then enjoy it. I'll step back a bit, though. It's just a bit too out there for me.
Fair enough. Now, we...
It's just the masks and everything.
You know how masks can be a big part of the appeal. I mean, look at Sleep Token. Though, that Imperial Triumphant is nowhere near as pop flavor, to be fair.
You take the masks away from Slipknot, they're just a bunch of mechanics getting together to jam at a gig. I've seen the soundcheck videos. They are fun.
I gotta rewatch some of those. But now we're out of the realm of metal, but we're still in kind of odd territory for this next track. So, Mark, why don't you go ahead and try and, like, warm us up to this one, since you're the one that dropped it in our chat.
I was told what this artist's name is. Alice Longu Gao, which, wondering who the fuck is that? Okay. They are a Chase Warren artist who's more into hyperpop. I'm guessing they're more in the hyperpop genre from what I'm reading. They kind of have people like Vera Musa and apparently have a new mini album called Assembling Symbols Into My Own Poetry coming around next month. They have singles like Korean Girls and Lesbians. Yes, there's a track called Lesbians. Now, in case you're wondering, why am I bringing her up? She's on tour on somebody that we always talk about and was on his podcast recently. That being Danny Brown.
Oh.
Yep. And he's featured on this track. It was a track called Bird Without Nest, or Bird, you know, W-O Nest, whatever it is. It's something like that. I was listening to songs, basically soft strings and, you know, screw guitars, which, okay, her voice is not bad. Her singing is just like, okay, we're just kind of good. I kind of dig it. And then we have Danny Brown's verse, which is basically him rap about mental health and trying to get his ego on like Nelly, Spur Rings to get my ego on, like Nelly on a true song. I need a home, like a pop up, I'm a rolling stone. Forsaken peace to have me along. I'd rather be alone, like your ball, like it's so cologne. Don't need nobody help, which, okay. It's a weird different twist with the song, with someone that, well, even though I never heard this person before, it's like, yeah, okay. They sound interesting enough. I watched that pocket episode. Her with Alice and Danny Brown, and that was all right. She's kind of cool. This is kind of cool. I'm hoping I said, I hope I got the pronouns right. I hope I do. I'm sorry. If I ever didn't, I'm sorry. But, all right. This is interesting to listen to, which I might give a look. I'll look into the stuff since, you know, they got music coming, like, you know, next month. So, yeah.
Okay, so I gotta admit, this is kind of a bit weird for me, even by Danny Brown standards. Like he's rapped on a lot of very eccentric beats, but, like, they're eccentric in a way that makes a weird amount of sense in Danny Brown's own home turf. But, like, this song kind of has more of, like, this college radio alternative rock thing going on. And the lyrics kind of have, like, this more, like, self-therapy sort of thing going on. So it's, like, it's certainly something. I don't know. Maybe if I listened to more of Alice's music, it would make more sense to me. I mean, it's not bad or anything. It's just, like, for a first impression, it's a lot to get used to at once.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that.
Anyway, do you want to take over the next track as well?
All right, then. So, okay. So, a name I ain't heard of said in a while. Well, two names I ain't heard of said in a while. Maxo Cream and, oh, look, Tyler, the Creator. So, yeah, I heard these two collaborated again. They collabed before. And now I make a new song with the title called Crack Era. Produced by Tyler. Yeah, it was like, I will say the track does sound, I will say going to check it sound, did you check this out kind of, at first it seemed like something that Pharrell would have produced, but then again, given that Tyler and Tyler's, you know, he's inspired by Pharrell most of the time, it's like, yeah, okay, you know, it just makes sense. This is kind of like, to me, it does sound like something that I hear Pharrell producing, but, all right, with this song, it's fine to me. Like, it's a very short song. Like, you got one verse of Tyler going, like, run the relay, feel like 060K, even Burr run around. I'm gonna white max on my PK. That's a BX roadie. I'm like a quarter. I just got a new one roster put in order. Nigga two tone, two door watching Juno. You know who them? Who you see niggas in the Munos? Yeah. Like, once again, it's a short ass song. You got Massive Cream rapping like cooking my cracker killers, shooting bitches, slapping niggas. Way before I was doing this rapping, I was out jacking niggas. Oh yeah, but cooking my cracker killers. Oh yeah, that's a lot I heard from Next Friday. Because that just sticks. That line was sometimes stick to you. But yeah, this song is, I mean, it's fine. I know it's just like a loosey track, but I don't see her any musically from Tyler. I mean, I know Mike Maxo. I mean, I know he's doing a lot of shit, but yeah, this is fine. It's just okay to me.
Yeah, I don't have much to say, mostly because it's very short. Not a lot to work with, personally speaking, but anyway, moving on to the next track here. So we have to talk about Poppy again. Still not entirely sure I understand the appeal. Specifically because it looks like she's dropping a new album November 15th called Negative Spaces. We have a brand new single called They're All Around Us. And probably the most notable thing to say about the album in terms of its overall, you know, cycle is that this record is being produced by Jordan Fish, the former keyboard player for Bring Me the Horizon, who exited / was dismissed in, you know, last year because of reasons. So, you know, I guess that's kind of interesting, but anyway, getting into the single itself, it doesn't waste any time getting started, ripping right out of the gate with abrasive, high-pitched shouts, a lot of double kick with these really, like, meaty, fast-paced metalcore riffs leading into this very melodic kind of synth-laden chorus, which, hey, wait a second! This is just a baby metal song! And I'm not saying that to be funny. Like, I'm not saying that, like, I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, think about what you expect from, like, the typical baby metal song. Like, think about the energy of the riffs. Think about, like, the fast pace of the drums. Think about, like, the production tone of it all. Even that particular way that it, like, goes super energetic on, like, the verses, but then ramps up to these very, like, you know, pretty sounding, almost like pop ready metal choruses. The structure of all of this is just full on baby metal. So why wouldn't I just listen to baby metal? I do not understand Poppy's appeal still.
Okay. Putting that aside, yeah, we are back in the metal domain here. I guess that feature on the new Knock Loose album awoke something in here, so good for that. As for the track as a whole, I will say it's not bad. Like, it's not it's not outstanding, it's not amazing, but it's not bad. So just do more of this and less of what we usually expect. Also, she did a blah, so, you know, a couple points for that.
Everything is better with a blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to the next track here. So we heard a bit of news from Devin Townsend a while ago when he announced his newest album coming out October 25th called Power Nerd. Still a fun album title. So we had that first title track, which is very energetic, very silly, very fun. And now we have single number two here called Jainism, which is a bit more serious and straightforward. Like, instrumentally, it may not be super dour. It's got this very steady tempo, these straightforward power chord progressions, and plenty of melodic ambiance, courtesy of the synths, and also, like, that nice particular typical Townsend, like, vocal production style, like, very multi-layered while still keeping this kind of melodic gruffness to it that's kind of the hallmark of a sound. This sounds a lot more like what I expect from something like Epicloud, let's say. And the lyrics are, well, they're definitely very fitting of the tone, like, they're not really all that goofy. There's more this kind of, like, sense of desperation to them, kind of, like, seeing the concept of existence as this temporary state of just utter lunacy and madness, and Devin just like, nope, fuck it, I want to get out of here. Which, honestly, mood. So, like, yeah, maybe not as fun as Power Nerd, but it's still pretty solidly reliable as a Devin Townsend jam.
Yeah. Now, you say more like Epicloud. I will say that was definitely more on the first track. This feels more akin to Sky Blue, which a vastly underrated album, by the way.
Hear, hear.
And, yeah, and I believe this ties into what Devin said about the track, how it ties into more of his connection to music from back in the mid-90s, read the end of the Steve Vai project, Neurotica demos, the Irate project, which Jason New said that didn't go anywhere, the first Trapping album, so on and so on. Along with what it means to, quote, rend yourself artistically to an unresponsive world in 2024, which, yeah, endless void. I get it. So just go nuts and make some noise in spite of all of it with faith in yourself. I dig it. It's really solid here. I like it.
That is a fucking mood. Now, we're going to get back to Devin later. But now moving on to the next track here. In news that can be filed under, wow, you couldn't have timed this shit more poorly if you tried. There's a new Jane's Addiction single out.
Well.
In fact.
Lol.
LMAO even. Like, seriously, I have to wonder, like, I know fuck all when it comes to the specifics of how, like, record label executives do promotion and releases and stuff like that. I just have to know, was this, like, something set in stone that the label and managers couldn't do anything to stop? Or was this just, like, some dick in a suit hitting the panic button and being like, everything's fine, nothing to see here?
I think this is more of a case of, yeah, shit's fucked, just throw the single out, see what happens. Fuck it, who cares?
Like, I mean, at this point, the band is pretty much broken up. Like, come on. I guess by now we're just, like, rubbing salt in the wound. But, like, yeah, the single we have here is called True Love.
Oh, God.
Well.
Oh, my God, that's fucking funny.
Anyway, if we're just talking about the song itself, so let's try to get back on track here. So, like, the single, it's this kind of delicate, like, alt-rock ballad carried by a lot of light drum rhythms, this kind of effects-heavy guitar melody thing. Simple lyrics about, like, true love, which are, like, they read as very, very funny in context. Like, the song is nothing special, it's just your very, like, run-of-the-mill alt-rock ballad, but, like, oh, man, the timing of this all. The timing is beautiful.
This is a song that exists. I guess. What do you want me to say? Like, the song exists. It's there. It's like 4 minutes of time you're never going to get back.
Yeah, realistically, there's not much to add. Honestly, I think I just put it here so we can laugh more at the breakup.
Oh, God.
Anyway, let's move on to the next track here. So, as we all know, The Weeknd recently announced his newest album, Hurry Up Tomorrow. Still no release date, though. We just know the album's coming at some point. And we have the second single from the album here, which is called Timeless. And this single not only has a very notable guest feature, but it also features promotional single artwork that makes it look like something that you would see promoted by a Slipknot cover band. Anyway, so who's the guest feature here?
Okay, all right. Hey, Playboi Carti.
Oh.
Well, so suddenly that first single doesn't sound so bad now, does it?
Now, hang on. I believe in giving everything its fair shot. Maybe Cardi sounds more palatable with The Weeknd kind of smoothing over the edges. So, let's try to take the song as it is. Production-wise, I'll give it that it has a bit more nuance to it compared to the more direct pop appeal of Dancing in the Flames. The synths in the background are kind of fairly subtle, occasionally swelling to punctuate the mix, with this kind of, like, tweeting set of synth melodies, both kind of, like, in the low, well, kind of all across, like, kind of somewhat bassier, but also more high pitch type of thing. It kind of sounds like, to me at least, like it's sort of trying to split the difference between The Weeknd's preferred production style with a little bit of kind of, like, the whole Cardi rage sound sort of thing. Maybe not as blown out as something like Fiend or Miss the Rage, but you can kind of hear it if you're, like, squinting at it from a certain angle.
Yeah, I kind of get that, too, considering this track has six producers on here, including Pharrell and Mike Dean, which is just, you know, four other people, which whose name I can't pronounce. Like, you got, what was the name? OG Volta, Twisco, damn, BBY Kobe, and Blessed. With the dollar signs, I admit hearing hear how this shit was like my expectations was not high, and I admit near the Weeknd's part, like, I can vibe with this. I mean, I still don't care about Cardi as an artist overall. I mean he's there. He's there, and I don't know. He's just saying it's race shit. I mean, it's something I can vibe to. I mean, the beat's good to vibe to, but I mean, I will say this definitely does feel something that's trying to be, it's a single, is what I'm trying to say. Because once again, the show, like, from Don FM, those ain't exactly up for radio, but this might try to get that shit, at least from what I'm hearing.
Honestly, I'm going to say this is on the other side of fine. Just a little bit below that threshold for me. Like, I don't know. This feels kind of like overthoughts. Like, it's trying to do a little too much with the six producers on board. And you know who wasn't a producer on that track?
Metro.
Max Martin.
Oh. Yeah.
You know who was a producer on Dancing in the Flames? Max Martin. The man does not miss, except for that time where he did miss, like in the 2010s, because that a lot of the music was not that great. But the point is, the man does not miss. Give him your flowers. Like, that makes Dancing in the Flames look so much better to me now.
Let it be known, Alex is very pro-Max Martin.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I am. He was the producer of the 90s. I have learned a lot from his production techniques and songwriting styles.
Interesting. I'm learning things about my co-host today.
Yeah. Okay, I will say this, when that one comes out, Y'all better have OP on there doing something.
Please.
Or at least. Or have something interesting on there. Have something interesting on there. Like, I ain't saying being done for. I'm not saying being done with again, although it would be nice. But at least have something that makes it, you know, interesting. Just why I fucked with the last two albums. And most of Starboy. Then again, Starboy was because of them two Death Punk songs. But either way. Either way.
We'll see what happens when we get a date, finally.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of impressions left by second singles from highly anticipated albums. So, after the myriad of opinions and discourses that followed the initial news of the Linkin Park reunion album cycle and all that business, we officially have the second single from this current lineup, which, as a reminder, features Emily Richardson of Dead Sarah on vocals. The new album is called From Zero, coming out November 15th. And single number two here apparently also doubles as a theme song to the 2024 League of Legends World Championships. Which,
yep,
reminds me to double check, because I know there was recently an announcement about the soundtrack contributions for Season 2 of Arcane. I don't remember. I don't know. I gotta remember if, like, any of the Linkin Park guys were on that list. Because I know Misha Mansoor is apparently doing something for Season 2 of Arcane. That I gotta listen to. But, we have single number 2 here, of course. It's called Heavy is the Crown. And, not gonna lie, the immediate impression I get is almost kind of like the band started off trying to write a new version of Faint. Like when you look at the structure of it all, like, it kind of intros with, like, this synth sample that might not be as immediately iconic as the opening of Faint, but, like, it's kind of in the same ballpark, immediately leading into this, like, kind of energetic, steady, like, riffing. You get, like, Shinoda doing more fast-paced rap vocals. It's very reminiscent in that regard. And then you get, like, the heavier bridge with, like, kind of the switch up in the chord progression. Emily Richardson really going hard on the vocals, like, almost kind of sounding like she's trying to do, like, she's trying to prove she could match something like the iconic lengthy shout scream of Given Up. Still an indisputable top 10 moment for the band, and, you know what, I'm just gonna say it. Why wasn't this the comeback single? Like, this has way more of the kind of confident bombast that I was looking for. Way more of a we're fucking back kind of tone that you would want from the return of one of the most iconic rock bands of the 21st century compared to the relatively more kind of feeling out the waters feel of the Emptiness Machine. Which honestly makes it kind of even weirder that the song is technically supposed to double as a League of Legends promotional tool, you know?
Well, blame Riot Games for it.
Me.
Of course.
But, this does have a bit of Meteor era Mike with a Minutes to Midnight era riff and groove. That's the style that I think they're trying to go for. And, yeah, longest scream vocal since Given Up. And, yeah, I still dig it. I know there are still a lot of reservations over awkwardly gestures and everything. But at this point, everyone's going to pick their sides, and we're just going to have to wade through all of that. People who are into it are going to be into it. People who aren't, aren't. Let's just carry on and just go about our business like they are. Because they're playing the show at Alliance Park in Sao Paulo in November. Immediately sold out. They booked a second night. That's 60,000 tickets each. So I think the public at large are going, you know what? We'll deal with it. We're here for the music.
Fair enough. And now for our last single here, a particularly noteworthy announcement if you're of a certain fandom and age. Let us remember now, the only good, well-aged take to ever be produced by the show South Park. Robert Smith kicks ass. That's the only good take they've ever had. And if you're wondering why I'm bringing this up, after quite a lot of teases and quite a bit of, you know, speculation and fun promotional shenanigans, it looks like the guys in The Cure are set to release what is their first studio album in 16 years. For context, that was 2008 with the album 413 Dream. That was when I was ending middle school, starting high school. That, fuck me. Like, in the amount of time it took for The Cure to release a new album, some kid could have been born and then applied for their learner's permit. But yes, now we have word that November 1st will see the release of The Cure's newest album, Songs of a Lost World. And of course we have the lead-off single from the album, Alone. Now, this is a pretty lengthy song, about 7 minutes or so. So of course it likes to take its time and vamp. It starts off very slow and steady, this very sparse drum beat, with this bass guitar that's kind of unusually twang heavy in the mix, like the tone of it hits unusually hard considering how ethereal the rest of the track is, like these very drifting strings and keys synths and all that stuff. Hell, Robert Smith himself doesn't even enter the song with vocals until about halfway. Of course, like befitting the song's title, the lyrical content is very melancholic, kind of meditating on the idea of loneliness and the aftermath of a bad relationship. So, pretty much as the kids would say, a mood. But yeah, this is honestly like, you know, I've never listened to The Cure at depth. I've obviously only ever heard Disintegration, which, yes, is every bit as good as you may have heard. So I'm not sure where this fits in the grand scheme of things, but for me, this kind of seems like it is a really solid song to just kind of throw on so you can, like, stew in your feelings if that's your thing.
So coming in here as a casual listener, my favorite track from them is A Forest, just for the record. There is a lot of atmosphere on here. Like, this is caked in airy ambient atmosphere. Like, the first half is just instrumental before the vocals come in, and it paints a very large picture of lament and longing and sorrow. I can get my people like this. I'll have to give the album a spin when it drops because of it now.
Mike?
All I can say is the only Cure song I listen to is on the fitting for me is called All Cats Are Grey.
I might have to, this will probably give me some time to actually work through the Cure backlog at some point. But that pretty much about does it for the new song discussion. We're gonna take a break now, and when we come back, we'll have the news to discuss, so stay tuned for that. And we're back. And we're going to throw it over to Mark here to get us started on these first two topics because it's hip hop on the silver screen.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe he has a segment that I just thought of, or at least remember that I think I did this once or twice a few years back. But yes, first two stories features rappers in some movie projects. First one being Aluki, his old friend, Big Man Buckler by Action Bronson. And he'll be joining a new movie from, okay, a name I heard a lot, Darren Aronofsky.
Oh yeah, that guy. Wasn't he the guy that ripped off Satoshi Kon for Black Swan?
Yeah, he tends to do that, doesn't he? Also Perfect Blue.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that too. Anyway, the movie he got was called Caught Stealing. Damn.
Him and Joss Whedon.
Ooh, boy. Anyway, the crime thing of Caught Stealing follows Hank Thompson, a former baseball player who comes to mention the society world of the 1990s New York, based on a Shelley Houston's book of the same name. So, who else in this movie, which is cool, it was himself, Austin Butler, Zoe Kravitz, David Gita King, Lee Schreiber, oh, and Bad Bunny, which I think I report, was the thing I said, oh yeah, I think I have said he was in here too. Do you know Rosie of Boston? No, not yet. That's all we know. So yeah, brought in this movie, and of course he got some experience. Of course, him having that little camp, him and him. I know he was in the end of, what's called the Irishman, which I still ain't seen. Yeah, go figure. And of course, if you're a fan of wrestling, you see him in the ring at AEW.
Yep, he's done a couple things. It's fun.
By the way, I agree with that one guy. Bring back Sly Cooper, you cowards!
Yeah, do that instead of not doing that.
Yeah. So, interesting. Maybe moves on it. I don't know. Could be. I don't know. But yeah, move to the next one. Move to the next one, and also my Debbie Disco to talking about Tyler Creator.
Oh, hey, you're
gonna make his, yeah, he's gonna make his actually film debut, which when I think about it, oh yeah, that's right. He'll just be stuff for TV, like Lotus Squad, the Jellies, and apparently he'll do something for A24 with director Josh Softy,
who is not a plagiarist thief, unlike you, Darren.
Yeah. So what? You want to watch that Justin is itself the Sunday Brothers? Well, a little while ago, they just say, I think Benny's gonna do acting and Josh gonna just do directing stuff. I think recently he directed something for Adam Sandler on Netflix, more of a comedy special, which. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Do you remember this lyric when he rapped, "Tell Tim Chalamet, come get at me"? Well, this the movie he's in features him. It features him, Gwyneth Paltrow, and the movie is called Marty Supreme. Which once again, this is an A24 movie, so yeah, you know, you're gonna have high expectations. Okay, it's gonna be sent around the world a professional ping pong pro. Okay. So basically, a ping pong movie. So.
God, I still need to watch that anime.
So like plot deals are, well, we don't know that much shit. I mean, there's an image of, you know, table tennis ball, and of course, screenplay is written by both Softy and Ronald Bronstein. And of course, well, do some on Eli Bush and of course, Chalamet has to produce it as well. So, okay. Time now about to be in movies now. Again, I guess considering his our future bro's been doing so well. You're all about, you know, a lot of books on the bear, right?
I still need to watch that show.
Yeah. Like I said, he's been doing more of acting shit, and Josh been doing, you know, basically, like, he just being, you know, the director now. Like I said, last thing he did was, Adam Sandler comedy special called Love You on Netflix. So, okay. And of course, he worked, and of course, Sutton worked on another part with Sandler on the world, and basically working with Sandler on a 7-year set in the world of sports movie and baseball. So, I guess it maybe not like Uncut Gems, but it's more like maybe, I guess, you know, I want to say more dignified Sandler, which is good with me.
I might have to check out that comedy special at some point. But I mean, yeah, this could be interesting, you know. Ping Pong, Josh Softee, Tyler the Creator, and of course, my favorite pro gamer, Timothy Chalamet Shimiyashimiyay. I totally didn't steal that joke from a Mike the Snare video about the idol. But yeah, so there's your hip hop on the silver screen news. Now let's move on to something completely different, metal operas. Or rock operas, however you choose to draw that dividing line. So, once again, we have to bring in our favorite bald Canadian madman, Devin Townsend, who, you know, he tends to, like, juggle whoever knows how many fucking musical projects in the air at one given time. One in particular that he frequently would bring up in recent years was a rock opera called The Moth, which, as a press release has once described it, you know, it's been in the making for over a decade, tells the story of the human experience from birth to death, comparable to the transformation of a caterpillar into a moth. It symbolizes the human quest for meaning and offers perspective on the fear of death through analogy and narrative. Pretty much ever since Townsend saw stuff like Jesus Christ Superstar and Phantom of the Opera, he saw this project as his calling. And now he's ready to bring it to the stage proper as a... He has scheduled a performance of it, one of the only performances, we'll get back to that in a minute, at De Oosterpoort in Groningen in the Netherlands, with assistance from the North Netherlands Symphony Orchestra. Now, at first, this was only one-off scheduled performance. Fuck, I mean, I can see why. This fucking orchestra's got like 70 goddamn musicians and a 60-member choir. And his own fucking band, no less. There's a lot of people that obviously need to come together to make the music for this happen. But that initial performance immediately sold out. I wonder why. And of course, to, you know, make up for that, he decided to add a second performance of The Moth on March 28th at the same venue. That performance has also sold out. Will there be round number 3? Who fucking knows?
Smart Money says this will be recorded in some capacity, so people outside of Holland can see it.
Now, you might be asking yourself, this might be because I'm drunk right now, but am I really going to consider pulling together money for a trip to the Netherlands just to say I'm one of the people who saw this live? I mean, I obviously can't because both shows are already fucking sold out, and the only way we know is if he adds a third, which also gets sold out, and then a fourth, which probably also gets sold out, and then he just keeps adding performances until they stop selling out. Look, a guy can dream.
I would pay money to see that. But I already paid money for Metallica tickets for next year, so I'm kind of tapped out right now.
Yeah, it'd just be like that. But this does leave one other question up in the air. What about the musical about the penis?
A and the second Casualties of Cool album as well. We both we are getting the ball rolling. We're getting closer and closer. But yeah.
Quit teasing us, you magnificent bastard. But yeah, we're just gonna have to keep an eye out on that. And if something like so if it did get like a release of some kind, what do you think? Are we thinking like live album, Blu-ray, concert film, both?
Yeah. It would be a big package. You hear that Inside Out music? You work with Devin for everything. Make it happen.
You said big package.
Yes, you're drunk, we know.
No, I was thinking because of the penis musical. I'm just saying. But anyway, now on to performance show news that doesn't quite excite as much from a certain perspective. I guess it depends how you're looking at this, because this was probably someone's cursed monkey paw wish. So, like, however many years ago, I think about, like, 2018 or so, we saw the very final iteration of the Vans Warped Tour as we know it. The yearly summer touring festival where all the Hot Topic kids and 20-somethings who didn't outgrow their emo phase got to all coalesce in various cities across America, leave their parents at the adult daycare, sit out in the hot sun to catch 30 minutes of their favorite metalcore bands one after the other. I jest, of course, but I'm pretty sure for a lot of people it was definitely fun. Like, I mean, I went to Warped Tour twice when I was in high school, and I honestly had fun both times. You know, if you're in the right mindset, it can be a fun experience. And, of course, you see the bands that aren't shit. But, of course, since then, you know, it obviously has not been a thing. But, well, I mean, the year afterward in 2019, there was, like, a handful of one-off shows for the 25th anniversary and everything. And there have been, like, news here and there that, like, you know, supposedly it was going to make some kind of comeback. You know, it was going to be coming back under a different name in 2021. And then fucking the douchebag from Attila was going to buy the rights of the festival. But that never happened. Now, in the past few weeks, there had been rumors, supposedly, that Warped Tour was going to come back in 2025. I mean, 30th anniversary, I can kind of see the logic there. But I kind of chose to disregard those, because anybody can just say shit. Like, if someone went on a Facebook anime page and said, "We're doing a full anime remake of Yu Yu Hakusho. Source, I made it the fuck up." like, I'm just...
Or a new Berserk project.
Oh, well, that'll never happen.
Yeah, that happened. That was stupid.
But now, we're just bringing this up now because it looks like there might be some more legitimacy to those rumors. Specifically, the fact that Warped Tour founder Kevin Lyman has said that they've got something cooking for 2025. In an interview with Polestar, he said, and I quote, "Yeah, we have something cooking for 2025. Details should be ready in a few weeks." A lot of this comes following various reports, mainly by Brian Storm over at Rockfeed. That various sources close to the matter believed it would be coming back in 2025, overseen by Lyman and supposedly Live Nation, although they haven't said anything yet. So, yeah, I don't know, like I said, how do I put this? I'm not one of those people that's, like, put off by the existence of Warped Tour. Like, I see it as, like, having its place, you know, for a certain audience and all, and like, if that's your thing, have fun. But like, what does Warped Tour look like in 2025?
Pop punk bands from 20 years ago. So basically a better version of when we were young.
Interesting that you would be that optimistic about it.
I have to be optimistic. Live Nation is going to be running this. I have no hope left.
Yeah, plus I figure it couldn't be any worse than when we were young. But is it going to be like a limited tour? Is it only going to be like whatever is the festival at the best venue they can afford? Is it still going to have the giant inflatable, you know, schedule at the center of the venue? Is there going to be, like, the ominous sound of real big fish playing in the distance?
Well, the guy said details should be ready in a few weeks, so maybe we'll know in a few weeks.
Let's see, how longer is a few weeks? Because the article we're citing from was published September 19th. So that would be around the time. So we already have 1 week, and we're in the middle of the second week. A few weeks is usually 3 weeks minimum, so maybe soon?
Maybe.
Yeah. But we'll have to see. All I know is, I wonder if they're going to get, like, I don't know, maybe like Kublai Khan or something, just because of the meme that they're trending on TikTok right now. Because, you know, it just occurred to me a lot of these scene bands do occasionally go viral for stupid shit. Like, there was a Motionless in White song that was going around years ago. And, of course, fucking Bring Me the Horizon, like, goes viral every other month.
Ugh.
But we move on from that to probably the biggest holy shit story to be emerging of the past couple weeks.
Okay, just a quick heads up. Our last show we did, we recorded 2 weeks ago. That was almost a 2-hour recording call for us. This broke not even 1 hour after we finished. 1 hour!
Yeah.
You couldn't have done it sooner, feds?
I guess apparently not.
Yes.
But yes, if you're wondering what kind of story we have to talk about that involves the feds, so on pretty much that Monday, so let's see, the article we're taking from September 16th, Sean Combs, aka P. Diddy, was arrested in Manhattan that Monday after an indictment from a grand jury. And this was following various news reports that we had talked about earlier in the year, specifically Homeland Security raiding his, his homes and stuff. All of this following in the wake of a long, long list of sexual abuse lawsuits against him. Shit, I didn't even include it in the news articles that apparently, like, I think he got, like, either his 12th abuse lawsuit or his 16th lawsuit, or at the very least his 16th, his 12th or 16th accuser. Either way, that's 13 or 17 too many.
There's a lot to go through here between all of that. He was planning to run, like, the day after the feds indicted him. His lawyer talking about, oh, he's just a big fan of baby oil. He buys it at Costco in bulk. And Costco say, and Costco had to come out and say, nope. The guy's a fucking weirdo.
Yes. Yes, he is.
We know he bought a whole bunch of baby oil, which, okay, who's the per? Okay, I don't know if he bought it online or in the store. Or, like, who's the guy? Who's the person that looked and said, why need that much baby oil? What the fuck?
Yeah. That's really weird, but I feel like, I don't know, I'm uncomfortable with the fact that people are memeing on it. Like, I don't think this is the kind of situation that warrants.
Yeah.
No.
It's been a lot of them just going around.
Time and a place, people. This ain't it. So, yeah, all of this was following, like, the ball really got rolling at least as far back as last November when his former girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, filed a really big abuse lawsuit against him, reached a private settlement a day later, but the legal fallout continued as 8 women and 1 man came forward with various allegations of sex trafficking to sexual assault. Of course, when he was initially arrested, the charges were not fully revealed, though the prosecution was being led by the Southern District of New York. And after the arrest, Diddy's lawyer was out here trying to save face, being like, I'm disappointed by the Southern District of New York's decision to pursue what he called, quote, unjust prosecution. Sean Diddy Combs is a music icon, self-made entrepreneur, loving family man, and proven philanthropist who has spent the last 30 years building an empire, adoring his children, and working to uplift the black community. He is an imperfect person, but he is not a criminal. Oh my god, get the fuck out of here.
Okay, wow. The community, you didn't make it worse. Because it'd be the stupid niggas who be vouching for the nigga for this shit, knowing that he did some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
And most of the time y'all make jokes like, oh, because he did the men too, it's like, oh, he basically, the classic homophobic bullshit going on. It's like, you realize that, oh, yeah, he did the men, that still means he's fucked up, right? You kind of need to get to your head like, dude.
Good fucking lord, this dude. But yeah, then of course, the day after the Tuesday after was when he headed to jail, you know, awaiting trial. And that's when we actually started to get more and more of, like, the actual charges being levied against him. Just a whole lot of shit. So some of the initial charges included, you know, racketeering conspiracy, sex trafficking, accused of inducing female victims, for the record, we're quoting from an article at the AP from Larry Neumeister, Michael Sizak, and Jennifer Peltz. Accused of inducing female victims and male sex workers into drugged up, sometimes days-long sexual performances dubbed freak-offs. Obliquely to an attack on Cassie Ventura that was captured on video. He told the court not guilty. Of course he fucking would. His lawyer was all like, Mr. Combs is a fighter. He's going to fight this to the end. He's innocent. Of course he is. Sure, Jan. Of course, other accusations like sexually abusing, using physical force towards women, getting his personal assistant, security, and household staff to, you know, fucking hide it all. Also trying, you know, bribery and intimidation to keep the witnesses and victims quiet. Just a whole lot of shit.
Okay, so the actual charges, to put it very simply, racketeering conspiracy, transportation to engage in prostitution, and sex trafficking. The feds don't go after you for that unless they have concrete evidence. And, this has been building for a while. Nothing anyone will say or can't say is going to make this any less disturbing or better, because it's not better in any way. Like, this is life in prison levels of shit here.
Yeah, I'm looking over more of the article here, and in addition to, like, sex trafficking, forced labor, there's also stuff like drug offenses, kidnapping, fucking arson, too.
Yeah, remember talking about how he blew up Cuddy's car?
Oh, yeah, that. And just to note, as of recording, he is being held in a detention center in Brooklyn with, and you're not going to believe me when I tell you this, but it's true, the former president of Honduras and Sam Bankman-Fried, the FTX guy. I shit you not, this is real.
Remind me.
Reality is fucked.
Remind me, FTX, is that one of the cryptocurrency companies?
Yes.
Oh.
Fucking hell.
Well.
Yeah, so shit's very, very fucked. They even wound up seizing, in addition to, like, the baby oil and lubricant, 3 AR-15s with defaced serial numbers.
Because that's what an innocent person does. Not.
Just, God, a lot of shit. Just all the garbage shit imaginable. And that's not even where it stops, because apparently, and I don't know if this counts as tasteless or not, maybe it is, but to be fair, it's slightly less tasteless than all the baby oil jokes, Apparently, Netflix is deciding to capitalize on the opportunity, as they're going to be producing a docuseries about the long, long sordid history of Diddy's crimes and allegations. That's going to be produced by none other than Curtis Jackson, aka 50 Cent.
I'm not surprised, to be honest with that, because I think it'd be clear that he don't like Diddy, or he just really, well, simply said something wrong with him, which, well, he's not wrong, but this scene kind of takes us, I don't know, did it get recent Netflix have been making stuff about the Menendez brothers, both a documentary and that, and a fucking show, news spot, that motherfucker Ryan Murphy, so, yeah.
Yeah, so this is, of course, being executive produced by 50 through G-Unit Film and Television. Various other producers involved. Apparently he announced that this would be, beginning in, or at least he announced back in early December that this would be a thing he'd be producing. So I guess only now is when Netflix is getting into the fold of everything. Hell, apparently at the time he even was sharing around a clip on Twitter that showed Mark Curry of Bad Boy Records talking about how Combs would spike bottles of champagne before, you know, giving them out to people. Fucking hell.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember what's his name, Mark Curry. Not the Mr. Cooper guy, the other one. Yeah, the other people named Mark Curry, apparently.
Yeah, so, all of this is very, very fucked. So we can only have our fingers crossed that justice is served, and seriously, fuck Sean Combs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people are gonna say he might name names or some shit, like he might bring out some bullshit, like basically pulling Nino Brown from New Jack City. Basically doing that shit, like, I'm gonna bring everybody down with me, like, and of course people go to act all dumb at, like, I bet it's him, basically on some dumb conspiracy theory shit, which, that kind of annoys me more, because, like, do you really care, or do you just, want to play some fucking, I don't know, mind game or some shit like that, because, like, this will be served, yes, but don't make it no fucking game, alright?
Yeah. So, again, we can only hope justice is served, because this is very, very nightmarish. But that will about do it for the news discussion for now. That only really leaves one more bit of business here, and that is, of course, the new album releases for the week of October 4th, 2024. Starting at the top, from experimental death metal act Blood Incantation, their newest album, Absolute Elsewhere. From noise industrial producer Pharmacon, we have the new album Maggot Mass. From Fever 333, we have their new album Darker White. From Motley Crue, they're, for some reason, putting out an EP titled Cancelled.
Oh boy.
I wish someone would cancel Motley Crue, then we wouldn't have to fucking hear from them anymore. normally I don't put in, like, anniversary reissues in the list unless I feel like they're of note, and in this case, my possible favorite album of all time, Mastodon's Crack the Sky, is getting a 15th anniversary reissue. From the collaborative efforts of Don Richard and Spencer Zahn, we have the album Quiet in a World Full of Noise. From Caribou, we have their new album Honey. From Jordy Greep, formerly of the now-defunct band Black Midi, we have their new album The New Sound. From the band Godspeed You Black Emperor, we have no title as of 13 February 2024, 28,340 dead. From the producer Phineas, we have the album For Crying Out Loud. And last, possibly also least, depending on your perspective, we have the newest album from Coldplay with Moon Music.
Okay, I want to add something here, even though it released last week, and apparently a song that you did put on the list, put on here, but couldn't do because I was already out. somebody by the name of Right Hand Red Car. Oh, I'm sorry, Right Hand Red Car, formerly known as Christine the Queens, had an album out, Hope Core, which was released last Friday. Which, oh, okay, now I know I didn't, now I know I was on the list.
Yeah, that was a thing. Wasn't expecting an alias switch up, but I assume there's a reason.
I kind of, sort of did in a way, because he has been hitting in a while. I mean, you know, Red Car, the last up one left. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's a thing now.
All right, fair enough. Now time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, if you want random bullshit, Xander's Thoughts, just find that on various places and you'll find random bullshit from me, because that's just what I do. I'm not in it to be serious. I'm in it to bullshit around, because that's what the world needs. Random bullshit.
All right. Yes, it certainly does. Mark, what about you?
Of course, my time media, where I just promote my shit. And of course, my one at iwonderbookers.com, where recently, of course, time of the season shit has my summer anime recap, where I possibly say your favorite anime you like this year, that summer ain't shit. And of course, the fall coming soon, considering, you know, October meeting, there's going to be a lot of new shit coming out, so yeah, expect a lot of shit from that.
Dawn to Dawn Thursday. Woo! Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, etc. at Rob Barracuda. You can email me at robert@surrealresolution.com for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SurrealRezo. Like us on Facebook. Visit the website SurrealResolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all that good stuff. And of course, be sure to jump into our Discord so you can be immediately notified whenever anything new goes up there. Well, that'll about do it for this week. Hopefully we'll be back next week with the usual weekly business and, of course, the roundup for September 2024. So keep an ear out for that. And until next time, no more Chapel Roan takes. I do not care to hear any more Chapel Roan takes.
Please, no more. I don't want to hear about...
No more. Everybody needs to shut the fuck up, please.
Yes, even her. I'm sorry, but yes, even her too.